This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 382 of the Outlander podcast. I am still Jean-Gé.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Kate O. And there are still spots, a few. We got another person joining us this last week. There are still a very few spots. I think it's like three, on our Pod Abroad 2022 trip. We'd love to hear from you. Oh, sorry, that didn't line. If you want to find out more, go to podabroad.com. And we love hearing from you and texting you and saying hi and all of the things and wishing you a happy birthday. If you have not yet joined our text community, send us a hello at 916-659-5112.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along with chapter 68, entitled Savages.
What do you think of when you hear that?
You know, I thought it was going to be another insulting, well, not insulting, but
derogatory use.
Yeah. And it was still a derogatory use. It was just not being used in the derogatory way that it was intended. But I thought it was funny once I figured it out. I forgot about this chapter.
Me too. But back to savages. When I today or just now when you said it, the first thing that came to mind, did you not have a specific thing come to mind? Like, does it not maybe reading the word, but if someone said the word around you, think about who's asking you this. Typically, when I ask you or when I say I have a thought, when I hear a word.
You're going to sing something. I can feel it.
I don't have to sing. But my point is I think of something that is typically musical. Did you think of anything?
No.
Okay. So I thought of not when I took notes, not when I read it, not when I've ever read it. These 20 plus, however long this book's been out. Savages, savages, barely even human. Ba, 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 ba. You know what that's from, right?
Is that Pocahontas?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Nothing exciting. I just thought, oh, okay.
I knew you were going to sing it.
It wasn't until
I told you I felt it coming.
So I feel a musical connection and you feel it. Ginger's going to sing.
Whenever you're connected to it, you're going to sing it. I can feel it.
I wouldn't say connected to it. I'm not connected to it, but I know what you mean. So yeah. That's it. I don't even know the song. So, I mean, that's all I remember.
You clearly know more of it than I do.
It's not about knowing the whole song. And it's not even necessarily about making connections. It's just things imprint themselves on me aurally. Not a very great at saying that word. To the chapter. There are two jewels left. But Jamie will not touch the black one. He tells Claire it's for you. If he should be killed, he means her to go back. And she's like, what makes you think I'd go? I'll stay with Bree and Roger and Jen and Marsley and blah, 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 all the people. Why should I even go back? There's nothing to go back for. And he says, I didn't ken, but I've seen you there.
Did you think when he started saying, I've seen you there, that he was potentially going to say,
oh, I saw you in a window?
Yeah.
No, that's funny.
I did.
You're funny. Okay, I did not. However, the next thing I have written down are a little notes of what he is describing. It did not immediately evoke standing in the wind or standing at a mirror, you know, brushing your hair. However, and actually it can't be that because he specifically says what he's like, it's not firelight and it's not candlelight. So I'm guessing it's electric light. And she's like, how do you know? How can you guess what it is? How can you say what it is if you haven't seen it? And that's a whole other discussion.
Because you know what it's not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He knew what the two things that he was familiar with, and it wasn't either of those. So he says that he dreamt of her in the future. And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, it wasn't the past, and it's not now, and it's something I don't know, but I recognize you, so it has to be your time or in the future. And he says, and this is why it's the whole him saying, I've seen you in the future, is evocative, potentially, of the ghost, right? But mm-hmm. The way he describes it, past this is means it's not the ghost, at least not that sighting, at least not this time. He says she was sitting at a desk, something in her hand, maybe writing. So then I thought, oh, well, maybe he mistook standing, sitting, if he couldn't see her whole body, and something in her hand, maybe it was the brush. But how do you confuse brushing your hair with writing? Because that's one's up by your head and one's like by your waist level or boob level. I don't know. And then I thought, and then I remember, or continuing to read his description, he said light all around her, not candlelight, but he figured electric light. When he sees her in the window,
has knocked out the power in there, it's all candles.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why this specific dream or vision of her from this dream cannot be the ghost.
No, I know
the
that.
One that we know.
I know that. But when he first said, I've seen you there, I was like, oh, that was the first thing. I was like, oh, even though I knew it wouldn't be that because Diana hasn't told us that yet. She said the last book. So I knew it wasn't that, but I had a moment where I was like, oh,
well,
oh,
okay, sidestep. Yes, Diana has not told us, and we will find out to the last book. I am not saying anything against that because I'm not suggesting it's not that. However, I think we have a giant, I've said this for years now since we interviewed her in 2014. She gave us a giant clue. Now, this doesn't mean it has to be right at this moment when I'm about to suggest, but she told us for the first time, I believe, not just us, but the world through us, through our show. As a matter of fact, this interview has been cited. I still get Google alerts, people like 5 times a year, I'm not joking, that different news magazines, not mainline, not mainstream, but, you know, entertainment rags, if you will, but all like from Europe, like, whatever. My point is people are finding this, and thankfully they do at least somewhat respectable journalism in that they cite us and link our show and quote what she said. So thank you to everyone who has done that. That's very kind of you, or very correct and kind of you. Thank you for being responsible. Anyway, she told us and the world the first time in 2014, the age of Jamie's ghost when he's standing there looking up at Claire. The first time we see or hear of him being seen, I guess, his first appearance in the books. And she says he's 25. Now, if you do the math, that is approximately his age at Culloden. So I'm not suggesting it at all that it is. Okay, I'm going to make a suggestion, but I'm not saying definitively it is this because we know I'm not Diana and we know Diana has not told us yet. I will suggest that, and I think you and I have talked about this several times, that if that is his age, which is approximately around his age at Culloden, a fan theory, and I did not make it up, but I tend to agree with it. A fan theory has been that when he shows up in quote unquote ghost form there, it is when he's, obviously he's not dead, but when he's very, 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 very unconscious on the battlefield.
Well, he was trying to die.
Yeah, well, he's supposed to die. He's supposed to die. He went. That's the whole reason he sent her back. If he thought there was any chance he would survive, he would not have sent her back because he didn't want to be without her, right? We all know this. This is old news. So anyway, it did not evoke that thought for me, which is so funny. We just talked about how I hear a random word and I like sing a lyric, right? Whereas something like this, and they're not the same. They have different, I think, spots in your brain. One, musical memory or musical access is one part of your brain. The other kind is who knows where. Some psychologists can let us know where this is or how different it is. But yeah, I read the exact same thing you did, and I did not think immediately of him, his ghost looking at her in the window.
Well, I mean, I immediately, like within moments, was like, no, that won't work. But I had a moment where I was like, wait. But then I also think she has pretty much looked roughly the same.
At least on the TV show.
Well, not just on the TV show, but even in the book. She's like well-maintained. She's ageless, right? So her hair just kind of lightens, but she's kind of kept the same hairstyle-ish, you know? And I wonder if what he dreamt of her being back there was him actually seeing her during the time she was there. Like the 30 years or the 20 years that she and Bree were in modern. It could have been anything.
You're wondering if, at least in this dream that he's describing right now, it was in the 20-ish years that they were separated.
Right. It could have been.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Okay. There's the whole thing about time travel, which we know some of the rules, but not all the rules, right? Because we haven't Diana has not told us everything. And we don't know, similarly, we don't know all the rules, although there probably are fewer rules, of Jamie's dreams. Because in dreams, you don't have to go through stones to travel through time, right? You just dream. So if, unlike when you time travel, you go forward or back or whatever, right? There's very specific rules that Diana's world has, of which we know only a few. I'm wondering if, so like with time travel, if you go back, you're in a different year, but your physical body continues to age forward, right? Like you don't suddenly become negative age, obviously, or else you'd be dead or less than a zygote, right? So you continue, your physical body continues to age linearly, normally. That doesn't change. So, so like that, I'm wondering if, regardless of Jamie's age, for example, and this may give us a hint. Let's say, for sake of argument, that Jamie's dreams or visions, whatever they are, okay, are linear. Meaning, this is, sounds like it's going to go against what he says later on about something. But let's say if his ghost seeing Claire, you know, up, whatever. Well, actually, that doesn't really. I don't think that really matters. So if they were linear, meaning if Jamie's ghost was 25, right? And if his view of her looking up in the window when Frank was outside, she's combing her hair. If that truly happened when he was at Culloden, okay, when he left his body, whatever, whatever, then we already know his dreaming or views of her in his dreams are not linear, right? Because what was happening right then? Right then when he was at Culloden, she was being found. In the show, she was found by a driver. In the books, she was found and then taken to hospital, right? So if it were truly linear, and I'm not suggesting it is, I'm just trying to give a comparison, right? If his dreams were linear of, if I dream of Claire on this day, then 200 years from now, I'd be dreaming exactly what she's doing at this day 200 years from now. No, his dreams are not linear. And I just wanted to actually rule that out for myself. So just using that, we don't know for sure if that's it, but if indeed Jamie's ghost, when he was almost dead at Culloden, that's when he sees Claire. That is not equal time. You know what I'm trying to say? So that would have been like 3 years removed, right? Because that was just before she, like the day before or whatever, she disappeared the first time. So it would have been, and that was 3 years. It was just before she came through the first time, which is 3 years before Culloden-ish. So all that to say, that right there, we know his visions, his dreams are not linear, which is fine, which makes sense because dreams shouldn't be. Our dreams go all over the place. Like there's no rhyme or reason to them. And it makes sense that, so what you're saying or what you're wondering would follow that. If he is now their ages of his late 40s, her early 50s, or even both of them in their 50s, whatever, it's 1774. So whatever their ages are, if he is like you're wondering, his dream of her writing or his vision of her writing in a dream is from the 20 years that they were apart, obviously that's more evidence that his dreams aren't linear, right? Because it's not right then. If he were dreaming of her right then, she was right next to him. So she was not gone. So yeah. So I think it makes a lot of sense that his dreams can be all over the place and they're absolutely not linear. Like he may have linear dreams. For example, we know later on some people we love go somewhere and he dreams of those people and it may not be in the same moment, but they are absolutely absent from him, right? So mm-hmm. We know that it can be linear or timely. He can have a dream of something, of someone who is currently gone from him in a different place, and he can have a dream of that place at that time. But that's not always how it works, right? We have evidence of now of all kinds of things he can dream about, different times. So yeah, so he's telling her about a dream he had, and she's in the future. She asks, well, she says, how old was I? And he doesn't know, but he does confirm she did not have white hair. So that would also make sense that it was during those, it could have been during those 20 years that they were apart, right? So yeah, that's a whole thing. And I know we have more to talk about in this chapter, but yeah, Jamie and his dreams are so, man, they're not, I don't think they're as interesting as TT, but they are hecka interesting. They're right up there. They're very interesting. So they agree to give their emerald to McDonald, who had come to the Ridge in a rainstorm the day before to tell them that he'd found a printing establishment for sale in New Bern. It's like, something like that is found, you have to act quickly. And of course, to do that, you have to have money. So the owner of previous owner, or I guess the current owner of the print job, had been a loyalist, and he'd been kidnapped by the Committee of Safety and thrown onto a ship to return to England. McDonald had mentioned to somebody or some people in New Bern that Fraser just might have some ready cash to buy it. And Jamie asked him, "Whoa, McDonald, what makes you think this?" Quote, McDonald looked surprised, then knowing. He winked.
I think this was Diana's laziest character name.
He winked and laid a finger beside his nose.
Okay, Santa. Did he go up the chimney next?
You stole my thunder. I literally wrote, wait, isn't that something Saint Nick did in The Night Before Christmas?
Uh-huh. Sure did.
Oh, that's too funny. I was like, why have I never thought about that? I've never thought about Santa Claus. Quote, McDonald replies, quote, I hear the odd bit here and there. Word has it, you've got a wee cache of gems, or so I hear, from a merchant in Edenton whose bank dealt with one. Unquote. Oh, fun. So people can't keep their mouths shut. And they know immediately, they both look at each other and they're like, Bobby.
Can you imagine what their next door would be if they had next door back then? Everyone that I've belonged to, both in large towns and small towns, it all just becomes a gossip rag.
Well, that's awful.
And I'm like, you know, people just haven't changed. We have nothing better to do. We still have nothing better to do.
Summer. Exactly. People haven't changed. Of course they haven't. Speaking of not have changed, I think I sent it to you. Did I send you that remastered, recolored video of a young girl eating something or eating oatmeal or eating something out of a bowl from 1905? And then a cat walks on the table. I mean, it looks like it could have been staged for TikTok this week. It's a remastered video of a young girl from 1905. And it's not like extra special. There's no like effects. It's silent. I mean, someone added music to it, but it's a silent film. But they colorized it and then they restored it. It looks, it is kind of freaky. It's so wonderful. It's really beautiful in that it looks just like someone from today, who obviously was dressed up in older clothes or old timey clothes, whatever, doing this. And it's like, the reason I'm saying this is because like you were talking about the gossip factor. No, we have not changed. We have not changed. And it's so easy for us to think we're better than the past. We're the same.
We have plenty of other things to do that are more important, but we still choose to gossip. There are so many there are so many other things that are more important that we should be spending our time and energy on, and we still choose gossip.
So it was Bobby. And then they're like, okay, fine. So then they talk about the print shop with McDonald. So McDonald, in the end, gets the emerald, agrees to go back, turn it into cash, and purchase the shop on their behalf. Jamie then has a chat with Fergus. I mean, his whole family, but mostly Fergus, about the differences. He's like, look, now, if we're going to do this, you have to remember the differences between Edinburgh and New Bern. You need to whom to bribe, whom to do this, whom to do that, how to do this, how to handle this stuff. And Fergus is just taking notes all while singing Alouette, gentil Alouette, blah, blah, blah. So he's singing. Marsali is nursing Henri Christian. They're talking about it, and Fergus is taking notes like, got it, chief, got it. And he's just like singing. Not that he doesn't take it seriously. Of course he does. But he's just like, uh-huh. And it's just funny that Fergus is like.
Fergus is ready to not feel like a burden on his family. Fergus is ready to provide in a way for his family that he hasn't been able to.
For a long, yes.
He's seeing light at the end of the tunnel. This is the same dude who tried to kill himself like a few chapters ago.
A little while ago. So fast forward to the scene that Summer wants to get to. The family is packed and ready to go. So long story short, they're going to move. And on this moving day, they cannot find Germain.
This made me so nervous at first because of the last time he went missing, which is, I'm sure, Diana's purpose in having this happen. But like, they stole him and put him in a basket and ran him down the river like Moses, right? So my concern when he went missing again was that something similar to that had happened again. I was like, oh, for crying out loud. I know he was fine because I've read more books, but I had that moment of not more. Leave that poor baby alone.
They can't find Germain, and Jemmy is missing too. And they can't find Henri Christian. So they get the dudes involved, and basically Roger and Ian, all the dudes, all the dads and everybody who can. Because, okay, Fergus has gone on. So Fergus is gone. Fergus has gone ahead to New Bern. And so, it's mostly Ian and Roger. But the dudes go out to look for them. And Ian says he thinks he knows where they are. Aiden had shown Ian a secret place, a shallow cave. And so they go down there, and there they were. Or they see them there. They can tell that they're there. They hear them. And Ian lets out a Mohawk scream and scares the boys to death. And they scream, and then they end up getting them. And there's a whole, it's a very touching scene, don't get me wrong, but it's basically, you got to go. Your mom needs help. You can't. We can take care of only Christian. No, you can't. He needs to nurse. Da, da, da. Your mom needs you.
This is what happens when they tell them stories of the time when Grandpa Jamie lived in a cave.
Hiding in a, at the, at right? the like, gun bonnet.
Yeah. This is what happens when you tell family history.
Opa can do it. I mean, granddad. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's how the chapter ends. They cry, they're sad, and they're not going to stay. They have to go.
Good for them. I'm glad that they got to go. And that was chapter 68. I'm moving right along to chapter 69, entitled A Stampede of Beavers.
If you're a listener to our show, you're likely a fan of Outlander. Did you know that there's a new indie historical fiction novel that Diana Gabaldon wrote a foreword for? It's called Ian of New Scotland, and it takes place during the same time frame as A Breath of Snow and Ashes, only much further north. Those Highlanders did get around.
13-year-old Ian Robertson is homesick for the Highlands of Scotland. It's September 1773, and he has just arrived in Nova Scotia with his parents and little sister after the long, disastrous Atlantic voyage of the ship Hector. They wanted a new life in New Scotland, but the land agent lied to them. With no money, no food, no shelter, and winter fast approaching, how will they survive?
Author Margaret McKay of Nova Scotia draws on the true stories of her Highland ancestors. The book is full of history and culture, with so much about the Gaels and even about the Indigenous people who helped them, the Mi'kmaq.
The book is good for grades 4 and up, but it's also great for historical fiction lovers of all ages. Ian of New Scotland is a classic tale of survival, like a Little House on the Prairie book for Highlanders.
I think one of my favorite moments was when Ian was out exploring with his friends, forgot his shoes, ran back to get them, and was confronted with an incoming tide. And you'll have to read more to find out.
Ian of New Scotland is available now wherever books are sold online. Published by Braden Press of Nova Scotia, Braden is spelled the Gaelic way with two A's. For more info, visit bradenpress.com/outlander. That's Bradan press.com/outlander.
We have a date, October 25th, 1774. Whenever I see a date, it's not always, but many times it's with a letter. So there's no letter here, but it's just important enough for us to have a timestamp. Again, I should start saying timestamp. Diana gives us timestamps from time to time. And since they're so unusual, inconsistent, non-existent in the show, we have to hang on for everything we're worth, for all we're worth, to anything we get. So at least for the book, we have timestamps. Okay, or date stamps, I guess, whatever. So Ian and Bree are walking for a while. They're on some kind of journey. Apparently, Bree didn't know what it was about because it was only after an hour of their walking that she realizes that they weren't looking for game. She's like, oh, so this is a little bit different than what I thought. She asks Ian if he wants to tell her what they're looking for. He says, no. She's like, so it's some kind of surprise, maybe? Ian says it'll take until noon the next day to get where they're going. And she was like, the pho?
Exactly. You did not properly prepare me for this outing. Oh. I feel like I would have packed differently.
A little bit better.
Had I known.
Differently, yeah. So he had told Jamie. He didn't. Well, who knows what he told Jamie all. What we do know is that he had told Jamie they'd be gone for 3 days. And he assures.
I love that he told everyone but Bree.
Well, he didn't tell Jamie necessarily where they were going. Again, all we know from the text is that he told Jamie they'd be gone for 3 days. But that's more than she knew.
That's still more than he told her.
And he assures her that Jem will be looked after. So he is fine. He's with his fam, his whole fam dam. But whatever this is important to Ian. But he still won't tell her what it's about.
That makes sense.
So So the first night, they camp near a beaver pond. He goes off to do, I guess he was hunting, or who knows what he was doing. I forgot that part. But she's fishing at the pond right there. She catches 3 fat fish. And then a little bit later, or soon after that, beavers stampede toward the pond, followed by Rollo. So Rollo has, you know, it may or may not be hunting instinct, but he's definitely, he's a chaser. He's playing, at the very least he's playing, right? At the very least he's playing. And he found something to chase and they'll run. So he chases them.
He catches all of his own food anyway.
He does. He's very good. So he's good like that.
I could, and most of his food comes from the river.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me for him to be like, I eat things that come out of there. You look tasty.
You don't look like a fish, but I saw you around the river. I mean,
those
water.
Those beavers could f*** him up if they...
Oh, they almost did.
With a well-placed, like...
They effed her up. Yeah. So the beavers are stampeding toward the pond, followed by Rollo. So she's like, the who, the how, the who, the what? And Rollo jumps into the pond after them. Apparently, she'd been helping Rollo, we find out after the fact, regarding with the beavers. So once he was in the water, the beavers were afraid, right? They ran to the water. But once Rollo was in the water, which is their element, they'd gone for him. Mm. And she went in to try and save him. And she'd been slapped by their tails. And one of the slaps, I guess, was so hard. Like she thought her bone may have been broken. I mean, they're that strong.
That's a much better story than how I broke my foot.
The only time I've been hurt, I didn't break anything, but the only time I felt anything akin to what I believe she may have felt is I was back in the day. I may have told this story here before. It's very short. Back in the day, I would do the odd pet sitting. And there was someone I pet sat for, who had a sweetheart pit bull. Sweetheart pit bull. She was the sweetest pit bull. She was big, but she was nothing but a lover. She wanted love, 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 love. So I wasn't afraid of the pit bull, but she was so strong. And this woman had her wear on her, or had me use, this is all she had, like a harness, which you don't do on those dogs.
Because no, they'll pull
that's
you.
Where their power is.
They'll
in their
drag
chest.
You down the street. Yeah.
So anyway, I did it to the dog and we started to walk.
You did not do it to the dog. Please don't say that.
I put the thing on the dog and we walked for, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. I walked the dog and she was not trying to hurt me. I don't know if she tried to lunge. I don't know what happened, but she, with her power, slammed into my lower leg. So the area of the tibia and fibula. So there, I guess you're, not my shin, but like to the side. That slam was so hard. It didn't hurt. I mean, it didn't feel good. I mean, it wasn't wonderful. But my point is, the force of that slam, I swear to goodness, I felt the bone, which would have been my tibia, you know, your tibia, the head of your tibia, which it connects into your knee, right? The head of your tibia and then the bottom of your femur connect to make that joint connects to make your knee. Yeah, I felt my knee shift, like the bone in my knee shift. And I was like, because if it had been much harder, like, who knows? Like, I haven't seen pictures, but I've heard people tell of, like, if you get hit, whacked really hard, like, you know, your bone's out of the socket, let alone out of your skin. Like, that's disgusting, but, and painful, I'm sure. But I thought, oh my God, did my bone just, like, do I have, because if it's on a joint, like, I'm going to fall. And this dog is going to go because I can't run after her. That was scary to me. It wasn't that painful. As in, like, the force was not pleasant, but it was just, it feared me. It scared me to feel it shift because I thought, oh my God, if my knee joint's out of socket, like if my bone is no longer aligned, I can't walk. So thankfully, no, it did not leave the socket, but I felt it move. It didn't hurt like a break, but I felt it move and that was not pleasant. So tell us what happened to you.
I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm just going to tell people I was trying to save my dog from some beavers in the river.
Stop it.
And they hit me with their tail and it hit me so hard that it just broke and shattered that one. But it didn't shatter. It was just a jagged.
That would be
fracture.
A very, very, very specific, not specific, a very pointed. That would have to be a very talented beaver to aim like that. So no, you got to tell us what happened.
No, I just fell. It was stupid. I tripped and I rolled my ankle onto my foot.
But how did you trip?
On the phone on a Zoom meeting and my pants were too long.
There you go. Makes me laugh so much. I'm not laughing at the fact that you hurt yourself.
But see, this is the problem with my height. This is the main problem with my height and women's clothing, because women's clothing comes in normal, which is anywhere from 5'4" to 5'7". That's a good 3 inches of length. right? And then you have petite, which is like 5 foot to 5'3". So you've got, and then you have the tall, which is like 5'7 to 5'9 or whatever. My point is that if I get the petites, they're too short. But if I get the normals, they're 3 inches too long. Like, I can't win. This is just a normal pair of pants that was not rated for a tall person. They were just normal pants that were just way too long.
So the best part about this, and I don't mean making fun of it, like being funny or being entertaining, although it, there's a little bit of entertainment here in retelling it. The best part about this, as she still hasn't, or not still, she's not keeping it from us, but that I'm trying to elicit from her is, so we know how you felt like, right? Your pants were too long and you were walking and it just, and you fell. You tripped over them or the end of it. What were you doing when it happened?
I was on a work call talking to my manager for my job.
Yes, but you weren't sitting on your butt.
No, obviously. I was running around the house closing windows because the gardeners showed up and it was loud. So I was trying to shut the windows so it wouldn't disrupt my work meeting, and I disrupted my work meeting.
You were taking your meeting as you were walking around doing the windows, right?
Yes.
And then on the way back or away, whatever, one of the times you were walking around doing this, you fell.
Mm-hmm. It was the last window. I had every other window shut. I was running to close the last window.
You think if you had walked, you maybe wouldn't have fallen? Or at least you wouldn't have, even if you would have fallen, you running means you have more acceleration, which means you're going to have a harder fall.
I still could have, and it was not the first time I've caught my feet in my pants, those pants that I no longer wear. However, it was the first time.
You no longer wear, you better not.
No, I do not. They are no longer my pants. I will not wear them again. Even though I've got probably enough height with this cast on my foot that I could probably wear them now without any difficulty.
No, they're bad luck now, Summer.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not going to wear them. They're gone. But I mean, I had premonitions of falling in these pants because I had tripped and caught my feet.
So what you're saying is you didn't
before.
Listen to the universe.
No, because they were squishy and comfortable. They were so comfortable.
So
I loved them.
You were running around or whatever it was. You were going around trying to do it quickly so you could beat all the smoke and all the, well, I do it for the smoke, but also the sound. But you were trying to, or exhaust, I should say. You were trying to close the windows to, so it wouldn't interrupt the meeting you were on. Mm-hmm. And you're continuing to chat at whatever your point of chat is as you're walking around. And you finish the last one, or almost the last one. Yeah, finish. And you're walking back or walking somewhere and you, boom, you fall. And then did you go like, ow, or did you do like, did you have any kind of exclamation?
I said, I think I broke my foot.
And you said it right away.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So you said, I think I broke my foot, and your boss is on the phone with you.
Mm-hmm.
And what did she say?
She offered to come pick me up and take me to the hospital. And I was like, I don't want to, no, that's fine. Let's just finish this meeting.
So,
and then
how did you finish the meeting on the floor or did you get back up?
No, I hobbled in and sat at my desk. Because we were screen sharing. I was only leaving my desk so that I could close windows.
Yes, but I mean, how did you get back up if you were on the floor with a broken foot?
The same way I got to the ER. I hobbled.
But you were standing. You're standing when you hobble. You didn't get on the floor and get back up again. I'm saying, did you break your foot standing up or did you fall?
I never went down.
Shitballs. Shootballs. I did not know this. I thought you went down.
No.
You never told me this. You're Mm-mm, keeping it from me.
I never went down.
So how did you break it then if you didn't fall?
I rolled over on the side of it trying to catch myself.
Fudge a doodle squirts. Okay. Yeah, okay. Well, thankfully you didn't fall. If you had fallen, that's why I was curious how you got up. Okay. So, to confirm, she did not fall. She rolled strongly. Her foot rolled strongly. And then, anyway, so then, and she's like, no, let's finish the meeting. That is what cracks me up.
So, the thing to take away from this is the only part of your foot you're actually supposed to walk on is the bottom of it. So, you just don't have the same strength on the sides. Or the top, depending on which side of your foot you're choosing to walk on. Just walk on the bottom of your feet, people. And wear pants that aren't too long.
Yeah, but also listen to the universe if you have premonitions like this. Come on. You were given plenty of warning. Blah, 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 blah. So that's Summer's thing. And then in the end, she did try to get a hold of people, but just by bad luck and timing, she had to drive herself with a broken foot to the ER, okay. And then it was,
which sounds like the hardest part, but it wasn't. The thing that was hard was I had to park in the patient drop-off area because There was no way I was going to be able to walk from a parking lot, the very back of the parking lot, all the way to the ER. And it was like 10-minute parking. And I was like, no, it's just going to stay there. I can't do anything about that.
If there's a ticket, there's a ticket.
I was afraid they were going to tow it. So I was like, this is about to be a very expensive day. I get in there and I'm leaning against a wall, keeping my foot up. And the security guard brought me a wheelchair, which was very nice. And I thanked him. The problem with the wheelchairs they have in the ER now is that they don't allow you to wheel them. You have to be wheeled because the locks are in the handle behind your head and you can't reach them. So the guy in line behind me at the ER very kindly pushed me through the line, which was the most unfortunate thing for me because he was obviously there for himself and he was sick too. Why should some other sick person have to take care of me in the ER? So I felt really bad about it. So I was profusely thanking him every time he moved my chair. I'm sure he was totally over me by the end of it because I was like, thank you. And I'm sure he was just like, shut up. I'm only moving you so I can get closer to the end of this line.
So I can get help.
Exactly.
It's actually selfish by this point.
Right.
So that's our little tangent, or not so tangent, on...
But again, if you ask me in public,
bone shifting, it was a beaver summer.
I saved my wolf hybrid dog from a beaver stampede.
So Brianna had been helping, or had been trying to protect Rollo, and she'd gotten slapped by their tails. She was afraid that she was afraid one of her bones was broken because it was so hard. And in the scene we see her afterwards, when she's recounting all of this to Ian, she's all wet, and so he gives her his buckskin to put on. So As she's drying out and he's cleaning the fish and prepping dinner, she asks him if this little trip they're doing has to do with Ian's wife. And he says yes. He brings up that he'd thought of marrying her, meaning Brianna. And she realizes now that Ian had imagined that marriage in all the ways, meaning everything marriage entailed. And Ian seems a little miffed to learn that he would have been third on her list of marriage partners, potential marriage partners. Roger was one. He totally understood that. Lord John was number two, which I can also get behind.
He should have understood it pretty deeply, given the fact that he's basically her first cousin. And that's fucking gross.
I mean, to us it is, but and to her it may have been, but to him it wouldn't have been.
There's always a shortage of young ladies of marriageable age when you go away from big towns.
Ian tells her about the time he'd met Lord John when they had come to the ridge with young William. And he asks her, or he's interested to know about her. He said, this is where the conversation, I mean, when I started writing this, I was like, I wonder if this is something. And I don't really think it's a thing, but it is interesting that he asks twice, but that's kind of neither here nor there, but I'll read what I wrote. Here's where this conversation gets interesting. In the writing, meaning in Diana's writing, while Ian does not seem to be overly interested in his mannerisms and in his facial expressions and all of that about whether or not Bree had ever met William, he does ask a few times. The first time is, did you meet Lord John's son then at River Run? Willie is his name.
More gossip.
The second time, you've not seen the lad yourself, though? So the reason I'm pointing this out, which may be absolutely nothing, is even if Ian doesn't mean it, which he may not, I am wondering if Ian knows right now or back then, because of the way he looked, does Ian know about Willie and Jamie?
You know he has an idea. You know.
Well, that's what I'm getting at least right now. Because we haven't gone forward to other books where other things
may happen.
Because
why mention what he looks like at all?
Agreed.
If you're not trying to point out.
Exactly. Agreed. So that's why I pointed that out, because I thought that was interesting that he asked twice. He seemed not to be, or at least trying not to be, overly expressive about it, because he didn't want to give anything away. But he's like, if you've seen him and you know him, we can maybe approach a conversation. But she never answers. I don't think... I don't think she has.
You know, he's secretly going, you were almost your brother's stepmother.
Oh, good Lord. Stepmother. Oh, with John. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So she answers the second question and she thinks he's deliberately trying to change the subject. And he is. Do you think Or do we, readers, know or suspect if Ian knows about William being Jamie's? And you answered that. You believe that he at least has an idea, or he would not keep asking about this, specifically her. He asks Bree if she ever felt quoi? I don't know what that is. Well, it's in French, it is. Qua means what? And in Italian, it means here. Toccami qua means touch me here. But that's a song. That's a whole other story. Whole other podcast.
That sounds dirty.
It does. It's straight from, look, Italian arias aren't that clean. Don't have to be clean. He asks Brianna if she'd ever felt, quote unquote, wrong, but doesn't give any kind of explanation of what he means, but he's pretty sure she'll kind of get the gist. And she does. She says, all the time. Except for in the woods, and of course, except for with Roger. Ian implies that he feels wrong when sleeping. Ian does a great job, or Diana does, of course, of relating the Gaelic she, the fairy, the old folk, to the Cherokee Nunahi, and the Mohawk, something or other, because he does not give us a name for them. He does say that the Mohawk have many names, but the Mohawk, something or other, that he believes they're all the same. Akin to each other, the old folk. Like Vida, he tries to explain it to what he believes about this. He tries to give an analogy, and he's like, well, it's like the vitamins, right? You can't see them, but you and Auntie Claire, you know, are like promising me that they're real. You just can't see them. And he's like, that's kind of like the old folk. You can't see them, but they're there. She's going to agree, but then a feeling comes upon her and she doesn't want to say anything there in that moment and place. So that's a little like, which we get it because they're in the woods, but which is where she didn't feel wrong.
You don't want to talk about him. Don't talk about him. What is wrong with you? That's borrowing trouble.
Yes. So Ian talks of his sense of absolute security, knowing where he was when he woke up at night. He knew where he was and how he was and that he was safe and he felt very loved while he was at Lallybroch. And Bree says the same thing about her home on Fury Street. And then Ian says after he was kidnapped, this experience, this feeling went away completely. He didn't know where he might be or who he might be. But he says when he lay with Emily from the first, he knew who he was again. Quote, my soul didn't wander while I slept, when I slept with her, unquote. And now he feels it does wander. He tells Brianna he does not think Emily is dead. And of course, he's sad. This is the most he's opened up about Emily, like either in ages or ever. Definitely to Brianna. And so she scoots over to him and lays beside him and is cradling him until she falls asleep anyway, because when she falls asleep, he's still awake. But she wants him to tell her, but he's not ready yet. He says not till they get there. So some place they'll be going the next day, we believe. So then the chapter turns into what I began wondering if it was a story or a dream time, but I believe it's a memory of Ian's. So in Ian's memory, he and some fellow Mohawk males are sitting around a fire. It's story time. And they ask, someone tells a story and then they say, Ian, your turn. And he says, no. And they ask him twice and he says, no, twice. And they say they want to hear tales of the great sea and the woman with the green eyes. So we all know what that is and who that is. He'd never meant to speak of them at all. But he'd been drinking rum once and it had gone to his head and he told a story. And so this is when I began to believe it was a memory. Emily appears. She is there. So that's why I think this is a memory. She comes up to him and he wants to return to her bed. And she's with child and he's thinking about soon she's going to have to go to the women's house. And then 2 months before the baby and then once the baby's born, a month after that, it's going to be a long time without her and her in his bed. So he's, all of this is like flooding back or he's thinking of this. And Emily is then there handing him more beer, also urging him to tell stories. And she says, tell us about this woman with the green eyes. And he says, quote, "She was a witch and a very wicked woman, but she did make good beer, but not as good as yours."
And that's the one thing you're going to say about Galen's dog. She made good beer. That's it. That's the only redeeming quality she had. Good beer. And, you know, a tastefully appointed house because she had all of the money from her dead husbands.
Yeah.
And that was chapter 69. Join us next time when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read along with the chapter 70 entitled Emily, wherein I believe we're going to find out more about Emily.
About Emily.
That's my guess. If I was a betting person.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Kate O. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise, you can visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop. And as always, you can join us to continue the conversation and our online group at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, we'd love to have you join our text community. It's free. Simply text hello to 916-659-5112. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.